This week's Dark Side of the Ring was the season finale on the steroid trials for Dr. George Zahorian and Vincent Kennedy McMahon. For all the talk about these Dark Side episodes, all how they make Vince McMahon out to be the devil, they finally do an episode on the guy, and he comes out of it looking rosier than probably any other episode they've done. I enjoyed it, though. I thought it was the best episode of the season, either this or the Grizzly Smith one. This one wasn't nearly as heavy or disturbing as the Grizzly Smith one, which I kind of appreciated. We didn't get any really heavy stuff here on this episode. The star of the show was easily Vince's attorney, the legend himself, Jerry McDevitt, who's represented him for the better part of 30 years and has never given an interview on camera like this one before. So it was a nice coup for the producers to get him to sit down for this. The man came off, you know, calm, cool, collected. He was slicing up the government's case with the precision of a skilled surgeon or the chef at a hibachi restaurant. I love that they got the warlord for this. The man has a... he's got a way of... You know, it's funny. When I think back to that era, late 80s, early 90s, WWF, the warlord probably would be, I would say, top three on the list, along with someone like the Ultimate Warrior, who would walk around and just be a giant glowing neon sign for steroid use at the time. But every interview that I've ever heard with him, he comes across as a nice dude, very down to earth, pretty open about what guys were doing back then. Warlord was hardly the only man doing steroids in that company at the time, but he was one of the more obvious cases. Brian Blair also interviewed, Jim Ross, Dave Meltzer, and Wade Keller were interviewed for this. Both of them covered the trial at the time. Also, John Arezzi of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight from back in the day. And they dug up the New York Post sports columnist Phil Mushnick, who's always come off like he had an axe to grind with pro wrestling. Even his other columns, if you've ever read them, if you live here in New York, you know, he still does columns for the Post. The man is one of the most miserable people on the face of the earth. Dr. Zahorian was assigned to WWE shows by the State Athletic Commission in Pennsylvania back in the 80s, and maybe even earlier than that. It might have actually gone back to the 70s. He was basically a walking pharmacist for all of the talent. He would walk around with a bag of all kinds of steroids and pills and whatever the boys needed. They knew they could get it from the good doctor without a prescription, or with one, but they knew who they could go to for what they needed. Now, steroids were legal to use until 1990, when they were classified as a controlled substance. And the feds targeted, at the time, a famous weightlifting coach who gave up Zahorian. He gave him up in a sting operation that had nothing to do with the WWF, except that when they raided his office, they found the famous photo on the wall of him posing with Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan, which opened their eyes about his connection to the world of pro wrestling. And it was after this that Linda McMahon very famously got tipped off that Zahorian may be under federal investigation. And this actually became a story about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago, when Linda was running for Senate in the state of Connecticut. And they were, you know, her opponents were going after her. And this sort of became a story all over again. Lucky her that she got tipped off, because Titan was all set to hire Dr. Zahorian as the doctor for their events. They were going to put him on their payroll. That would have been very problematic had they actually gone through with it. But once Linda got wind of things, she wrote a memo, a confidential memo, in December of 1989, and this was not covered in the episode. I'm trying to put some more, you know, context here to what was going on at the time, and this is one of the more things I find more interesting. I'm surprised they didn't really find time to include it, but she wrote this memo to Pat Patterson that read as follows. I'll just read it. It's a couple, you know, three paragraphs. I'll just read it to you. I spoke to Vince about the fact that the state of Pennsylvania is probably going to launch an investigation into the use of all illegal drugs, including steroids. An officer from the State Department mentioned to Jack Krill, one of our attorneys, at a recent fundraiser that his office would be conducting these investigations. At the same time, he told Krill that perhaps it was a bad idea to mention it to him because Krill's firm represents the WWF. In addition, this fellow mentioned that he was aware of Dr. Zahorian and his relationship with the WWF. Although you and I discussed before about continuing to have Zahorian at our event as the doctor on call, I think that is now not a good idea. Vince agreed and would like for you to call Zahorian and tell him not to come to any more of our events, and to also clue him in on any action the Justice Department is thinking of taking. On December 26th, the State Athletic Commission is having a small meet-and-greet session with some of our talent, and I would definitely not want Zahorian there. Now, Patterson did call Zahorian, but said he only warned him that there was an investigation. He said nothing about steroids. Well, that's not what Zahorian testified to. This is what he said under oath. He said, he had asked if I was calling from my office. I told him I was. He stated he wanted me to call him from a payphone. I returned to the hospital and called him from the hospital payphone. During that conversation, he told me that there was an investigation going on of Titan Sports, that representatives from Titan had been in Washington, D.C. for some kind of meeting, and at that meeting, it was made known to them of the investigation of Titan Sports, and that my name was brought up that I was being investigated. Because of this investigation, he and Mr. McMahon felt it was necessary for me to find all information that I had in my presence pertaining to the wrestlers, whether it be their records, telephone numbers, addresses, and destroy this information immediately. They did not want me to have any records whatsoever, and I was very concerned about this. He said that this may be something that is very minor, but we better be careful. And I told him, okay. He said, look, once this is over, we will get together and we can continue with our relationship. And that was the end of the conversation with him. I will say, Sean O'Shea, who was the prosecutor who tried to put Vince away, as poor of a job as he did in bringing those charges against him, he did make a great point during his closing arguments when he brought Zahorian's testimony up. He asked the jury, he goes, what was the last time you called your family doctor and said, where are you? You need to go to a payphone and call me back. He said, that's how drug dealers talk. He makes a great point. He said, that's what drug dealers do when they think the cops might be listening in on their conversation. I mean, look, I know I've never asked my doctor to go leave his office and call me back from a payphone. If I did, I don't think he would care to be my doctor anymore. But the government tried to get Hulk Hogan to testify at Zahorian's trial, and I think other people did. I think Piper did. They wanted Hogan to testify. McDevitt was able to get him excused on the basis that the two of them had shared a doctor-patient relationship because Hogan had consulted with him about wanting to start a family and have kids. And so compelling him to testify would infringe on his right to privacy, and I guess the judge agreed. Mushnick insists that the reason Hogan was excused was because it would have been injurious to his career, and that it should have harmed his career because he was feeding lies. Basically, what he was saying is he was feeding lies to all of his little Hulkamaniacs about saying their prayers and eating their vitamins, when at the same time he was abusing steroids to gain his mass and his size and his physique. McDevitt had a great line here about someone asking him about Ronald Reagan, who had been president a few years before. This is after he was the president of the United States, being subpoenaed to testify in the trial against his former national security advisor. And if a former president could be compelled to testify, then why was Hulk Hogan immune from doing so? And McDevitt just said, well, maybe Reagan had the wrong lawyer. I just thought that was great. So it only took the jury 3 hours to convict Zahorian. He served a 3-year prison sentence. He went right back to practicing medicine when he got out. And I believe he's still practicing to this day. They covered Hogan's disastrous appearance on the Arsenio Hall show, where they brought him on. The producers brought him on with the understanding that he was going to come clean about his steroid use. And they thought, what a big coup this is for us. We're going to get Hulk Hogan, this big wrestler, the most famous wrestler in the world, to come on our show and admit that he was a user, or maybe even an abuser, of steroids. And then once Hogan came on, he lied. And he claimed that he only used steroids 3 times, and it was in the early 80s, and it was all just to heal faster from some injuries and muscle tears that he had. Yes. And beautiful belly dancers are giving me a sponge bath every night and feeding me grapes before I go to bed. There's a better chance of that being the truth than Hulk Hogan only doing steroids 3 times in his entire life. Even McMahon was said to be furious that Hogan lied because people knew he was lying. It was so obvious he was lying. It would have made things easier if he had simply gone on there and told the truth. They had footage of Vince on stage at the Phil Donahue Show, sitting next to Dave Meltzer and his amazing Meltzer mullet. The producers had wanted to sit Vince and Bruno Sammartino next to each other. I mean, you had a whole panel of people up there. Bruno Sammartino, Billy Graham, Vince McMahon, Dave Meltzer, John Arezzi. I mean, a bunch of other accusers. It was like this line of like 8 to 10 people on this stage. And they wanted to sit Vince next to Bruno, as the story goes, but Bruno would have probably killed him, so they put Vince next to Dave instead. Arezzi was on stage as well. He called Vince out at one point on some of his BS, and here on the episode, Arezzi told the story that two men later came to his apartment when he wasn't home, but his mother was. And they told his mother, you know, you should tell your son he lives in a really dangerous neighborhood. And then they left. Which McDevitt said was nonsense, and that nobody would care enough about John Arezzi to send men in black suits to his house. Which is exactly what I was thinking. Of all the people they could have intimidated and they could have done that to, they weren't sending anyone to John Arezzi's house. Give me a fucking break. McMahon eventually gets indicted in November of 93 on 2 counts of steroid distribution and 1 count of conspiracy to distribute steroids. Actually, they brought 6 counts against him originally, but 3 of them got tossed out, and these were the ones that stuck. They didn't cover it here, but I talked about the jury selection process for the trial during one of my history segments a few months ago. Out of a pool of 100 jurors, 35 of them were excluded for some sort of bias or conflict for various reasons, like being a fan of the WWF product, or non-wrestling fans who said wrestling being a work could somehow affect their judgment in the case. Some of them even said they had relatives who worked for the same pharmacy that Dr. Zahorian used to, work for, or that he used. Some jurors also said they thought the trial might be fake because pro wrestling was fake. To which the judge said, "Do not question whether wrestling is sports or entertainment. It is not whether wrestling is pure entertainment or sport. The only issue at stake is the case of distribution and to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. This is the substance, not whether wrestling is phony or sports or entertainment." Vince showed up to the trial in the summer of 94 wearing a neck brace. A nice play for sympathy from the jury. Now, McDevitt says he really did have neck surgery, which is why he missed the King of the Ring pay-per-view in 94. That was the first pay-per-view he ever missed. He says he timed it that way on purpose. He didn't do it for sympathy, although I'm sure it didn't hurt. But knowing that the trial was coming up and he would have to miss some time, it wouldn't require him to miss any more time from television once the trial was over, assuming he was acquitted. He wouldn't have to then first schedule neck surgery and then be off TV for longer, so he claims he timed it on purpose to get the surgery over with. The prosecution in total called 11 wrestlers to testify against McMahon. Only one of them testified, I got testing on the brain, testified that Vince ordered them to ever use steroids. And that was Nails. The same Nails who physically assaulted him backstage over his SummerSlam 92 payoff. And my favorite part of the episode was the description of his testimony. He said Vince ordered him to take steroids. McDevitt showed video of him to the jury performing in an orange jumpsuit like a convict, which was his gimmick, which covered up his entire body. So the question is, why would McMahon order him to take steroids? Him of all people, if his body is covered up from head to toe. I think it's a fair question. If I were his attorney, I would ask the same thing. The defense then asked Nails if he had any animosity towards McMahon. And he said no. He said no because he obviously didn't know what the word meant. Because they immediately asked him, "Do you hate Vince McMahon?" And he said yes. That was fantastic. McDevitt, you know, I'm listening to some of this and I'm just thinking this guy had to be biting his lip to stop himself from laughing throughout this entire trial. Hogan agreed to testify only if he was granted immunity from prosecution for anything he might say on the stand, which they granted him. Hogan had just joined WCW by this point, so he and McMahon were not on great terms. And there was an assumption that between that and the immunity that he received, he was going to put the final nail in Vince's coffin, and he was just going to bury him on the stand, and Vince was going to go to jail. He was going to go to prison based on Hogan's testimony. And the opposite happened. He said he would call Vince's secretary to place orders for him with Dr. Zahorian, and that when his roids would arrive at Titan Tower, he would pick them up with his paycheck and his fan mail. Just casually, you know, paycheck, fan mail, steroids, it's all the same. He claimed he took anabolic steroids not only for bodybuilding, but to heal injuries, and that he no longer used them. He said he believed it was legal because he had a prescription for it. And he also said Vince McMahon never ordered him to take steroids and he never purchased any steroids for him. So Hogan's testimony helped McMahon, although Vince didn't see it that way. I remember him on the courthouse steps later talking about, you know, talking to the media about being disappointed that Hogan didn't tell the truth. And I always thought that was very odd. Like, why would you say something like that about a guy who went up there, you know, whether he intended to or not, and provided testimony that, you know, basically may have set him free. I mean, not that the case was that strong against him to begin with, but I always thought that was such an odd response. And over the years, the more I think about it, and the more I kind of look at it for what it is, I think it was just the promoter in him. I think he was trying to muddy up Hogan's reputation before his big pay-per-view debut against Ric Flair in WCW. I mean, it's absolutely the sort of thing I could see him doing. Otherwise, I just thought it was a very strange comment to make. If convicted, McMahon could have faced up to 11 years in prison and over $1 million in fines. It could have changed the course of the wrestling business forever. I'm sure you've heard the stories about them bringing in or wanting to bring in Jerry Jarrett, possibly to run things in Vince's absence. I think Bruce Pritchard maybe has disputed that. They would have had to figure something out. If Vince went, you know, up the river, you know, maybe he could have run certain things and, you know, passed along notes from prison, but they were going to have to find somebody else to run the company day to day. Who knows? Who knows how things would have turned out? Who knows where we would be today in terms of the wrestling business? This might be a very different podcast, or maybe there wouldn't even be a podcast. Maybe there's no big Monday Night War. I mean, the potential impact that him going to prison could have had on the business as a whole is just extraordinary to think about. But the verdict came back not guilty. He was acquitted on a single count of conspiracy to distribute steroids. The two counts of distribution were dismissed earlier in the week due to lack of evidence. My favorite part of the trial, and this was not covered in the episode, and I can't believe they didn't find, I mean, it would have taken 10 seconds to mention this, was Afa of the Wild Samoans being reprimanded by the judge for mouthing the words not guilty to the jury. This is before the jury rendered their verdict. He would look over and would mouth the words not guilty, you know, trying to intimidate them. It's no wonder the Samoans have always been so heavily protected in that company. Loyal to a fault. When the verdict was read, all the wrestling fans in the courtroom erupted into cheers like they were at WrestleMania. The judge was not happy about it. When this episode was over, what was clear to me is that for all of Vince McMahon's bluster and all of his boasting over the years about how he took down the United States government, it was less a case of Vince beating the feds, and it was more that the government's case was so weak, they beat themselves. It's like when I play air hockey and I knock the puck accidentally into my own goal. I mean, that's basically what happened here. They brought charges against him in Long Island, New York, when they should have brought charges against him in Connecticut. That was their home base. I mean, that was their biggest blunder. It was just the venue that they charged him in, because they had to prove that these things happened in New York, and they had no evidence to prove that. You know, the judge, when he threw out the distribution charge, said that the state of Connecticut could go ahead and pursue a case against him, you know, if they wished, and they never did. They also charged him with conspiracy to distribute steroids, and there was never any evidence that Vince actually distributed steroids to anyone outside of maybe, you know, Hulk Hogan. Maybe he collected them once for him and then gave it to him. But again, that allegedly happened in Connecticut. It didn't happen in New York. But I like the finale. I mean, not a lot of new ground was covered, but McDevitt's involvement here made the episode. If there is a fourth season and it has not yet been given the green light, I would like to see them tackle the Ring Boy scandal that came right around the same time as all the steroid stuff. Art Barr, I think, would make for a good subject. Matt Bourne. And I'll throw one more name out there. And the reason I'm not going to mention Chyna just because Vice did a 2-hour documentary on her already. I don't know that they would care enough to have Dark Side of the Ring basically just repeat the same content again. But I'll throw one more name out there. And feel free to offer your own ideas. I think a Larry Sweeney episode would be very interesting. And I know he wasn't a big mainstream name or anything like that. You know, he was a wrestler slash manager on the independent scene and in Ring of Honor and other promotions for those who don't know who he was. And he was unbelievably talented. And I think he would have gone on to be a very big name. He was the closest thing managerial-wise. He was the closest thing to a Bobby Heenan type of manager that we had in modern day wrestling back in the mid to late 2000s. And like I said, I know he wasn't a big mainstream name or anything like that, but he is one of the more tragic stories of wasted potential and mental illness. And so I think he should be given some consideration for an episode as well. But I hope you've enjoyed the recaps. If there is a season 4, I will be back for it. And until then, take care, guys.